for me, working out is much more, not in a woo-woo way, but like just much more meditative than it is like sciencey and put together that way. I just like the experience of listening to like music that gets me in an emotional place that I want to be in, lifting the weights to exertion, getting a sweat going. I just like that experience. And a lot of times when I'm working out, I'm doing it by myself with headphones on, listening to music that you probably wouldn't picture that I'm listening to, and just getting into an emotional place. And I think I just cherish that so much more than I enjoy it so much more than I would if I was following like a strict program and overthinking every rep and that stuff.
Let's link up with Krista on The Fix. She's a wellness coach with a focus on mental well-being and physical strength.
What's going on, Fix listeners? Welcome back to our latest episode of The Fix Podcast. I'm your host, Krista Huber. Happy April, brand new month. I'm excited, you guys. We have a great lineup to kick off this month of podcast episodes. If you were following along last month, it was all about the ladies. Women's History Month. Had the pleasure of sitting down, chatting with some incredible women. But I'm kicking things over to the guys to start April, and thrilled to be introducing my friend, fellow nutrition coach, Adam Badger. I had the pleasure of being on Adam's podcast not too long ago, and after an incredible conversation, I thought, hey, you have so much to share, such a great perspective as a coach. Let's do a podcast swap and get you over to the Fix audience, because every single person who listens to this show will benefit from what Adam has to say. Now, I will say this, there is a lot of conversation in here about how your fitness journey evolves as you go through parenthood. So for any of my moms and dads out there, I know there are going to be a ton of key takeaways, nuggets, a bunch of things that you can literally apply to this episode while you're listening to it. But even if you're someone who's just gone through a life transition in general, because that's really what the heart of what this conversation comes down to, is your schedule changes, your responsibilities change. And with that, it can often be difficult to figure out how to adapt your approach to fitness and nutrition. And Adam talked about his own journey as a dad. He's about to welcome baby number two here very soon. That's why the topic was top of mind. And I just really appreciated the fact that he was open and honest about points in his life where it was a lot easier for him to be super dialed in and super focused on his nutrition and his training, and how he really challenged himself from a mental perspective and making appropriate mental shifts to be able to still prioritize taking care of himself, even if that looked a little bit different with new responsibilities and a new schedule on his plate. So that whole idea completely aligns with what we stand for at the Fitness Fix, because I see time and again too many women inside of our program who come to us from a place of feeling like they're constantly putting themselves last. They don't know how they can juggle all of the balls that they have up in the air between managing their household, being a present mom, doing a great job at work. And then what happens? Something usually has to give. The give, unfortunately, tends to be her making the time to get to the gym, fuel her body, and take steps on a daily basis that are going to help her feel good. So if you identify that with in any way, even if you're not currently a parent, but you've noticed these changes in your life through different circumstances, you're going to love this episode. And what I really appreciated about it too is Adam and I really dove into this idea of values and coming up with an approach to your fitness and nutrition based on one key tenet of what is important to you. So as I invite you into this episode, I want you to think about this and ask yourself that question. What's truly important to you? How do you want to feel? Envision how you want to feel 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. If you feel stuck, if you feel like the version of you that you desire to be feels way too far away or feels like it's just not the right time for you to go ahead and achieve that, encourage you to reach out to me. And let's talk about coaching. Let's talk about getting the support that you need to be able to make that version that you have in your head a total reality, because it can be. So with that, let's welcome Adam to the Fix Podcast. Adam, welcome to the Fix Podcast. I'm so excited for our official podcast swap. Now that I was on your show, it's fun to switch seats and welcome you over to mine and do the interviewing today. Happy to have you. You're welcome. What I do with every guest, I'm a big coffee drinker. Okay. So I like to do a little icebreaker and find out what your go-to coffee order is. What are you sipping on in the morning over there?
Okay. So coffee order is slightly different than what I make at home.
I love it.
So if I'm making it at home, I just do two shots of espresso and that's in a cup and I just sip on it. Nice. That's super, super simple. If I go out for coffee, it's the go-to is generally a large iced red eye. Just black.
I like it. I was joking with my last guest. Typically, being that this is a fitness and nutrition podcast, most of our guests also in the wellness industry, we don't like to necessarily waste our calories on drinks like that. So I tend to get the more, let's call it boring coffee orders when I ask the question. But I did hear you say that you're an iced coffee guy, and knowing that you're from New York and it's cold, do you drink iced coffee no matter the temp? Because I do.
I just had one like an hour and a half ago. Nice. The coffee shop order is either a large iced red eye or a large cold brew. I'm into coffee too. So I like the taste of cold brew better than iced coffee. But if you get a red eye, basically means they're adding espresso shots to it. So if you got an iced red eye and you used cold brew as the base instead of regular coffee, you'll just be hyped all day
long. To the moon.
which might be a little too much. And on a side note, the ordering the coffee black, honestly, for me, has nothing to do with the calories. I just prefer it that way.
Because you like the taste.
And it's probably somewhat of some version of toxic masculinity where I'm like, oh, I'm not going to get creamer. I'm just going to drink the, it's like if I was to, you know, if I don't drink alcohol very often, but if I was going to order a drink at a restaurant, it wouldn't be something super sugary and fruity. It'd be a pretty basic drink. So that's I make that joke all the time. I'm like, if your girlfriend or wife drinks their coffee black, as a guy, you can't drink your coffee with cream.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you calling yourself out for the slight toxic masculinity, but based on the conversation we had on your show, talking about our emotions and things like that, I'm going to put you in the category of nowhere near anything like that. Cause you're out there doing the work.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, no, no. Yeah. That's if 90-10 split, it's 90%. I'm super in touch with emotions, totally down to have emotional conversations, if anything, to a fault. But then that 10% of me is still I got to order the black coffee. I can't put cream in my coffee.
Hey, it's all good.
It's balanced.
Exactly. That's the universal spectrum of our emotions anyway. So I like it. Cool. Well, we're going to dive right in with a deep question. So typically on podcasts, you jump in. And somebody's like, hey, give me your resume. Who are you? And all of that, yes, is important. We know that you're also a coach. I know that we work with similar populations, and that will come out through the rest of this conversation. But I want us to take it a step further. There are lots of podcasts out there. We were just talking about this before we hit record. You can get lost in the shuffle and the noise. So why should the Fix listeners care specifically about what Adam has to say? Give me the who you are, more at your core versus your resume.
Okay, I like that question. And this is good because I wasn't prepared for that question. So I have to think for a second.
I do this on purpose. I don't tell people because I want to know whatever comes up. Yeah,
that's good. I would say as far as listening to me, why that would be valuable to some people is because I don't think that most coaches are down to talk about the deep emotional stuff as freely as I am. On my show, I get very, I have no barrier. I'll talk about anything as far as my personal life goes and what I'm personally going through, what I see clients going through. I feel like at my core, I am toxic masculinity, coffee odors aside, I am a very emotional person, not in the sense of like, I let my emotions get the best of me, but I just like, I like to feel different emotions. So like if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling anxious, or if I'm feeling happy or excited, like I really like to just like experience that, even if it's uncomfortable. And I'm always down to have really deep conversations. I don't really like small talk and surface level stuff. So even on like consult calls with clients, there's times where, you know, it's the first time I'm meeting someone and I'm talking to them on the phone and we're 15 minutes in and we're talking about their childhood and their traumas, and people are like, oh my God, like I don't know why I'm crying right now. Like this is very emotional. So that would probably be at my core. I think I kind of see the world in a relatively unique way, in the sense of I ever since a young age, I always felt like I didn't just take things as they were. I always kind of like was like would question it or like why that. So when it came to like workouts and nutrition, we're talking about the background. Like I didn't go to college for this stuff. I didn't go to college at all. I think that fitness and nutrition is way more, I guess, to like art than science. And I have like a very artistic, emotional relationship with that stuff. So I don't really get super technical and sciencey with it. That was kind of long.
No, this is great. Let's unpack the fitness and nutrition from the art versus the science conversation, because I think this is where you and I are really aligned in our coaching. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to school for this specifically either. And I have started to have a lot of other coaches reach out to me. They listen to this podcast, or they'll message me on Instagram and be like, hey, I love your content. Where do you come up with your ideas for some of these things? And I think there's a lot of people out there who have this perception that you become a good coach first and foremost by reading the textbooks, learning how to program. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's certain knowledge that you need. I don't want to undercut that by any means. I don't want people to take this as, well, hey, if you had your own personal transformation, that's enough for you to become a coach, because mm-hmm. it's not. And yeah. I think there's a fine line with that. But the way to become a really good coach is to be a good listener and to have more experiences of actually working with people, connecting with your emotions, like you're saying. So give me your take on that. How did you arrive at that notion that this is more of an art form than it is so much the science piece?
I think maybe because I started getting into it at such a young age. And I was working out consistently, you know, for close to 10 years before I ever trained anybody. And I, throughout that 10 years, whether it's good or not, I never followed like a written out program or tracked my macros or did any of that stuff. Like I would read muscle magazines and things like that, but I never really like, again, I'm not saying this is good because I think there's a lot of value to it, but I wasn't like tracking my weights. I didn't know what RPE was or RIR or like any of that stuff. I just was going and lifting weights. And I think I'm very much old school like that. So as I got older and started training clients, when I first got into it, I was very in my head of like, oh no, like I don't have a degree. I don't have all these certifications. I have one certification and just experience. So I started overthinking the process. Now I'm 10 years into coaching. And now I realize that the average person who I'm trying to work with, they don't care about that stuff either. They just want, you know, the result part. So for me, working out is much more, not in a woo-woo way, but like just much more meditative than it is like sciencey and put together that way. I just like the experience of listening to like music that gets me in an emotional place that I want to be in, lifting weights to exertion, getting a sweat going. I just like that experience. And a lot of times when I'm working out, I'm doing it by myself with headphones on, listening to music that you probably wouldn't picture that I'm listening to, and just getting into an emotional place. And I think I just cherish that so much more than I enjoy it so much more than I would if I was following like a strict program and overthinking every rep and that stuff. So for me, I do have kind of an artistic brain as well. So I just, I can't picture just like reading textbooks on physiology and nutrition over and over again, or just talking about that stuff, if that
Yeah,
answers the question.
totally. What comes up for me in hearing that is a conversation that I have had repeatedly in the last week and a half, especially since going to the Real Coaches Summit. And there were two people who presented on this idea in slightly different ways, and both had to do with programming, but it was just this conversation of optimal versus practical, and really trying to define what makes sense for you at the stage you're at in your fitness journey, but also in your life. And I think you could really resonate with that because we talked about this when I was on your show. We work with people who are really busy. And this whole, all of the confusion and contradictory information that's coming across on social media, I understand why people have a million questions when they come to us and get on a call and they're like, I feel lost. I've tried this. That doesn't necessarily work for me. And it's like, well, yeah, because you could go on Instagram and every other post is telling you something different. And it's made it really hard for people to actually sit with themselves and figure out what's going to work with them for them, because how else do you establish that trust when you have so much noise? And I see coaching, and I'd love your reaction to this statement. Like, I see coaching as a way for you to help develop that voice for yourself versus us coaches being the person who's just consistently telling you what to do. That's not my end game inside of the Fitness Fix. And I would imagine you have a similar approach inside of your program.
Yeah, I think one of the initial steps that I take with my clients is getting them to really articulate what their core values are and what is the lifestyle they actually want to live. And once we can get that clear, then we can kind of build out, whatever your approach is to your programming and to your nutrition, and that'll evolve over time. The one piece of advice I would give to people who do feel overwhelmed, though, is that don't let the overwhelm prevent you from doing something. So that's the
Don't
only
let.
difference, because I've been overwhelmed by fitness and nutrition many times. I've even to this day, as a coach and doing this as long as I have, I still have times where I overthink or question myself, or overthink my programming, and I still get into those modes. But the difference is just that, like, I never stop doing what I'm doing and do nothing for an extended period of time until I figure out what's best. I'm still doing stuff. So there might be times where I'm doing like a specific, again, like, I don't have like a specific, like, oh, I do this workout program, but I'll have like a general split, and I might start rethinking it. Like, oh, do I want to switch this up? Do I want to add more cardio? But as I'm doing that, even if it takes me 6 weeks to tweak it, I'm still working out for those 6 weeks. My nutrition is still the same for those 6 weeks. If I'm thinking about like, oh, do I want to go into a cut or do I want to bulk? I'm still eating enough protein and working out that whole time. I just then will eventually tweak it. But the mistake people make is they go, I'm overwhelmed, I'm just going to do nothing. So I think as long as you're doing something, you'll continue to progress. And that's the mistake I see clients make, is they're just wondering what to do. So then just end up doing nothing. And then by the time they do hire a coach, they're so emotional, there's such a sense of urgency that they just want you to tell them what to do so they can get results as quick as possible. And that's where we have to have the conversation of going, okay, well, like, we need to try blank for a couple of weeks and see how that works out before we switch anything. And developing that patience is it's difficult. I get it. It's difficult, but it's really necessary.
Hey, developing the patience is very difficult, and I identify with that so much because when I think about my own fitness journey and I think about times where I wish that I had done something differently, it was because in my case, and I know you mentioned this to me when we talked about business growth and managing transitions in your life, I would get overwhelmed with other aspects of my life that were important and are important and are priorities of mine, to the point where I would then get inside of my own head and be like, well, I don't have time to get to the gym. And it was really that all or nothing mindset in action, because I would say I didn't have time to get to the gym. I did an email about this a couple of weeks ago when I literally worked in a gym and it was just the choice of getting off my computer and taking the 20 minutes that I did have that I could have used before I had the next appointment with another client. And I didn't take it because I would tell myself, oh, well, if this workout can't be at least 30 minutes, then there's really no point to it. And I really try to share with clients, like, I am in that thought process with you because I have experienced it as recent as a year ago, as recent as even the last 2 weeks. In the month of March, I was sick on and off a couple of times. And every time I would feel like I was ready to get back into my gym routine, I would have a day where I was catching up on something, because if I wasn't feeling well, then something would come up with my podcast or I'd need to make changes to my schedule. And I could feel myself like slipping back into that talk track of like, oh, well, if you don't have the exact amount of time that you feel you need to do this, don't do it at all. And then I'd be like, wait a second, I would never tell a client to do that. So go to the gym.
Yeah, I think too, it actually takes, it takes me more convincing. I have to talk myself into it more to go do the 20-minute workout than I would do the 60-minute workout.
Same.
Because the 60, sounds crazy, yeah, right? It sounds crazy because the 60-minute workout, you're like, oh, I have 60 minutes. I get to do this workout that maybe you're a little excited about. And then there's times where I'm planning on doing the 60-minute and then stuff goes up, comes up during the day. It gets shipped down to, okay, now I only have 20 minutes. It'll take a lot more for me to talk myself into doing that one because I can, I now have more reasons to say, oh, well, what's the point, right? It's like, it's only 20 minutes. Is this even moving? Is this even going to get me results? You know, things like that. But every time I just do it, I always feel better afterwards. And I again, it's just, you have to get in a, you have to develop some sort of emotional attachment to that process to where it's not just this thing you have to do. And that's where like the art part comes in. Because if it was just this like science-y numbers thing that I had to go accomplish, again, if I didn't if my workout's supposed to be 45 minutes, I only have 20 and I can't check all these boxes and track all these numbers and I'm not going to beat last week's lifts, why not just push it off till tomorrow? But if I'm more of like the art mindset of, well, it's more about getting out there and moving my body and getting something in, that will then get me to do the 20 minute workout or whatever it is. And I just had a talk about this with a client of mine because she has her program and she was running into this issue too. And I said, listen, take your workout. If there's four exercises on it, what I want you to do is on days where you're short of time, I just want you to set a clock for 15 minutes and I want you to do 10 reps of each exercise and just run through it like a circuit. And then she did it and she's like, I got 3 rounds done. That actually felt really good. I said, yeah, it doesn't need to be a 40 minute workout, but now you did it. Whereas like 6 months ago, you would have skipped 5 days. And that's one last point I'll make on this is this topic is, the big thing that I like to help clients with is closing the gap between off track and on track. So what if I just had a talk with a different client, I said, hey, listen, you know, you said in the past, if you got discouraged, that would lead to, you know, kind of like slightly disordered eating habits. And then you'd go off track and maybe it would take you a couple of weeks or months to get back on track. Right. And she said, yeah. I said, since we've been working together, when those moments have popped up, now how long does it take you to get back on track? She's like, more like 2 or 3 days. I said, okay, so now it used to take you 2 or 3 weeks to get back on track. Now you're in 2 or 3 days. I want to get you to the point where in 6 months, it's going to take you 2 or 3 hours to where you make the off-track decision and you can get yourself back on track. And now imagine how much better the results are going to be over the course of a year where you have those discouraging moments and like 3 hours later, you're eating a protein-focused meal and you're back on track. Like that closing that gap is more important and more valuable than the expectation that you're never going to go off track.
Right. Because one, it's crazy to think that you will have this perfect situation all of the time where we won't go off track. Right.
Yeah.
And two, that really gets at the heart of consistency. And it's, I tell clients often too, it's like, that's not sexy, so no one wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
But that's what gets you the results that you do have in your head of what you're looking for. Like if you want to know the secret sauce to the person you may be comparing yourself to, or even if the person you're comparing yourself to is this version of you from years ago, because I imagine you hear that a lot from clients, as I often do, and I've been in that headspace myself, and it's like, well, wait a second. If I really boiled down this version of myself years ago that potentially was fitter or looked fitter for whatever reason, there are probably very easy circumstances to point to where if we dissected it, it comes down to one simple fact that my life looked different. Mm-hmm. And however it looked different, it was probably easier for me to be consistent with getting to the gym regularly, with focusing on my nutrition. And that's what happens. Like, think about the responsibilities. And I think you're such a great person to ask this question to, you having kids and you're on your way to your second, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Like 7 or 8 weeks.
I knew away. It was really soon. Yeah. Right. So talk us through for the parents out there, like how has your perspective changed? And I'm sure leaned into some of these examples with clients, because having kids, my clients always say to me that that is a challenge in just learning to be more flexible. And what they tend to be too flexible on is they want to prioritize everything for their family to the point where they don't prioritize themselves. And that's what gets them into this negative feedback loop of what you said earlier, feeling this urgency of like, how did I let myself get to this point? So now I need to make these results happen a lot more quickly.
Yeah. So I feel like I could talk about that for 3 hours. Cause there's so many different things I wanted to point out. So I want to try and point them out briefly, and I don't want to just talk the whole time, but
go for
there's
it.
A lot of,
glad you feel like this is a good subject.
It's such a good subject because it's so nuanced. So first thing I'll say is for people who are not parents yet, but who plan to be parents, get your habits set up now, because it makes it, it was easier for me because a lot of my stuff was already habitual. So it was easier in some ways, difficult in other ways. Difficult because like we're going to talk about is like you compare yourself to what you were, right? But I already knew how to eat enough protein. Working out was ingrained as a non-negotiable part of my life. I had the identity of a healthy, fit person, which was super important. That was my identity. So once I had kids, and my wife is on board with that too. She's a healthy, fit person. She likes to work out. She likes to eat healthy. So we had that ingrained in us. So when we had our first son and now we have our second, does it make it more difficult? Yes, but there's no other option. So we're more flexible with it. We're more, we give ourselves more slack. We're not as strict. We don't have as much time. Yes. But it's not completely sliding to this other realm of behavior to where we're just like drinking every night and ordering takeout. Like my son has never had McDonald's. He's never had a Happy Meal and he's 3 and a half. Like, so get your habits in check now. If you are someone who was working out and is in shape and then you had kids and now you feel like it's starting to slip a little bit, there is a period, and it sounds weird, but there is a mindset, mental, whatever, emotional phase you have to go through. You have to actually give yourself space to mourn the loss of that person you used to be.
Sure.
And it goes across all across the board. I'm still kind of mourning that. And mourning sounds like sad. It's not a sad thing. It's just you have to acknowledge that that phase of your life is gone and you have to try to emotionally let go of it. And there's parts of that phase of my life that I haven't fully emotionally let go yet, but I'm in the process of doing that still. One of those things being is just like just acknowledging the freedom that me and my wife used to have before we had kids to travel, to go out and to do things, right? As far as the fitness thing goes, you have to give yourself space to kind of like mourn and accept the fact that that's just not you. But again, it doesn't mean like there's so nuanced here. It doesn't mean it's an excuse to then just be an unhealthy, out of shape version of yourself. It just means you're not holding yourself to that standard, because if you do, the trade-off is you will then be pushing away and ignoring other responsibilities the way you, some people ignore their fitness. So the way that you were talking about like, oh man, like work's getting crazy and this and that, and like I'm pushing off that workout and maybe I'll skip it. When we had our son, I was not in this mental space that I am now to where I had properly mourned that loss. And I tried to hold on to that regimen and that fitness lifestyle that I wanted, that I identified myself with. And it was based totally on external validation, what people would think of me, not wanting to be what I call a sitcom dad. Like that's one of my biggest fears. I don't want to be the sitcom dad, the out of shape dad who used to be in shape and just like has the wife that's out of his league and isn't holding up his end and is kind of lazy. That's my biggest fear. I don't want to be that. So, but my reaction to that was in the first few months of my son's life, I was holding on to that and I wasn't holding up my end of the bargain as a dad. Like I was present. I was here. I was changing diapers. I was doing all that stuff, but I was getting frustrated if I missed a workout, frustrated if I couldn't track my food. Not mm-hmm. My wife was recovering from a C-section and I was like, you know, getting frustrated if like, you know, we ordered out that night and it was a Wednesday, like all that shit that I'm embarrassed by now. But like, I was holding on to myself that standard. Ironically, by holding on to that standard so much, it probably sounds familiar to a lot of your listeners, during that first 2 years of my son's life, I was in worse shape. I was holding on to those standards so much that it was causing me to just yo-yo, because I would be super strict for like 4 weeks and then I would, you know, kind of go off track a bit. And I was, and all that stuff that we normally hear. So by the end of like, by the beginning of like, you know, or towards the end of 2022, I wasn't working out any less, but I just felt like I didn't look that great. So again, trying not to make this too long. I think if we're talking strictly about physical performance and aesthetics, I was in better shape at, you know, age 27 than I was at 24, 25, right? So like, I started working out in my teens and then into my 20s, you know, I was like, you know, still my diet wasn't great and I got my diet and my training aligned. Age 26, 27, 28, I was probably like, you know, peak condition for me, right? Then going into my early 30s, I felt like I didn't look that great, even though I was trying to balance everything. Now, 33, I feel that I'm genuinely in better shape or close to as good of shape as I was at 27, 28. But do you see like how it was like I had to get out of it to then figure out how to balance all this shit to then get back into it? So the thing is like, it's gonna slip, but it doesn't mean it has to slip away from you. It slips a bit. It's like if you're watching football and you go to catch the ball and then you fumble it a little bit, but then you finally grab onto it. So I shifted away from being in good shape, but then I figured out how to balance everything. And now I feel like I'm in, you know, pretty close to as good a shape I was in as when I was in when I was 28. And now I'm, you know, going on 34. So I talked a lot anyway.
No, that was such a good explanation. It's so relatable. I love how you tackled it from just the first perspective of like, hey, even if you don't have kids and you plan to have them, here's what to start thinking about. I really appreciate that you started there, but I also love what you just ended on. And I want you to unpack that part a little bit further. In making the comparison to the shape that you were in at 28 versus going on 34, talk to me about how your routine looks different, because what I would imagine is that you've also realized in not needing to like hold on so tightly to certain standards and expectations, mm-hmm. some of the letting go in that has allowed you to say things like what we were talking about earlier around hitting the 20-minute workout and actually being okay with it. Versus being like, my best physique comes from when I'm tracking my macros every single day and I'm training exactly 5 days a week. It's just loosening that up a little bit.
Yeah, the loosening up helps a lot because it helps you stress out a bit. When you don't have those high standards for yourself, I mean, you still have to set standards.
We need a standard.
When you're not holding yourself to, I have to be super strict, what happens is that you end up not being as strict, but you also end up not being as off the rails. So
totally agree.
Yeah. So like when I was even in like at like 27, 28, when I felt like I was in really good shape, I was, you know, working out 5 or 6 days a week. I was tracking my macros and I was also allowing fun in my life too. But when I would let loose and have fun, I would just go all the way that way. So I would, you know, we'd go out to eat. I'd, you know, just eat whatever I wanted. I have dessert, all that stuff. Now, because I don't hold on to that, I have to be so strict. When we do order pizza or if we go out to eat, I'm eating what I want, but it's a more reasonable. I just don't want to feel like garbage the next day. It's not even about like the scale or anything like that. It's like I'm more in touch with like overall health. So the main things that I've been focusing on going into my 30s is more just keeping it so basic. So like, instead of worrying about like the macros and all that stuff, it's just like, am I getting 3 to 5 meals a day that have protein, carbs in it? And then fats kind of find their way in there. Am I trying to get better sleep? Am I trying to get at least 3 solid strength training sessions in throughout the week. And then on top of that, making an effort to play with my son, go outside, stuff like that. One thing I say that, I don't know, I hate when people are like, oh, I say this controversial thing. It makes you sound like you think you're more important than you are. But I think it's relatively controversial. I've said this before, is that I think eating healthy is actually easier when you have kids. And people always, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, I do know what I'm talking about because I have kids. It's easier if your mind is in the right place. So the reason why I feel it's easier is because you now have external accountability of someone who you don't want to repeat bad eating habits. So if we get ice cream, I don't want my son to think that it's normal to eat as much ice cream as possible and eat an entire pint of Ben & Jerry's and feel like garbage. So I get a small kiddie size ice cream and it's around the same size that he gets and we eat the same amount and then I'm done, right? It's not because I'm like, I can't eat this. This is unhealthy. I'm just like, I don't want him to think that it's normal to just pig out like that, right? But he also doesn't, I also don't want him to think that he can't have it. So I'm just naturally eating in moderation so that he sees that behavior. But again, that's because I have that in my mind. If I was falling into the story of, it's just tough with kids. Kids like to eat sweets. Oh, it's hard to not keep cookies in the house because my kids like them. Then I would be setting a bad example. And I just had that conversation with another client. I was like, she was saying how she didn't want to eat cookies, but her kids like cookies. So, you know, it's hard not to keep them in the house. I said, well, if you don't want to eat cookies and you think it's unhealthy, why is it okay if they do it? And then she was like, oh, that makes sense, right? So it's easier if your head is in the right space of like, there's this person watching you who's going to absorb all your behaviors. So you have to act a certain way. And for me, drinking to excess and eating to the point of feeling sick, I just do that naturally now because I don't want them to think that that's normal.
Yeah, I think that's such an excellent point because I often have this conversation with clients too. The ice cream example is such a great one as we move into the warmer months of the year and summer's coming. Yeah. And I had somebody message me the other day and say, hey, one of the things we focus on inside of the Fitness Fix when it comes to really actually simplifying the process of tracking your food to your points of how can we actually make this simpler because it can be is when you're newer to the process and you don't necessarily have as much understanding of what foods actually represent protein, carbohydrates, and fat, pre-planning your meals can help you begin to kind of have like a library of like, this falls into this category, this into this one, and this into that one. So I was having a conversation with a client who is really focused on mapping out her day and learning how to plan these things versus being reactive to it. Mm-hmm. And she messaged me and she was like, hey, we kind of changed our plans. It was like 3 o'clock and she wanted to, it was warm. She lives in Charlotte and it was really warm that day. So she wanted to take her kids to ice cream after dinner. And she was like, how can I adjust my day to make this fit? And I said to her, because she also added to me exactly what you just said. I don't want my kids to think they can't eat ice cream because mom's not eating it. Like, she's like, I do want to have some. And I was like, well, first of all, let's talk about the size. Exactly. Yeah. Like you just said. And second, when we kind of went through and actually looked at what she mapped out for the day, she really only made some small adjustments to her dinner. And I told her, I was like, just log it with the intention of actually going over your macros, because she was hanging on to this fear that it was going to totally mess up her day before actually getting the proof that that was true. And when she logged it, she was like, oh, this is like totally fine. It's not that big of a deal. And it's also not that big of a deal because let's zoom the hell out of this and look at the rest of your week. If the rest of your week, you've been really consistent with your food tracking, if you are holding on to, like you said, this story that one cup of ice cream is ruining you getting to where you want to go, we have like a way bigger conversation to have that's an important one around your relationship to food and your expectations of what results you're trying to get in what timeline.
Yeah. And I think too, if you think that over the course of 12 months, that if you did that 50 times, it's still not going to make a dent in your results, right? But people get into that, again, that story of, oh, well, what I think it's a subconscious thing. So I don't think that the person is intentionally thinking this, but subconsciously what they're looking for is either they're looking for permission to go completely overboard, or they're looking for a barrier to be put there so that they can then rebel against that barrier at some point. Because if you were a different coach, honestly, like not as good of a coach as you are, and said, well, you got to stay within your macros, so I wouldn't eat the ice cream today, that puts that creates a story in her mind of, well, I'm not allowed to do this while I'm working with Krista. So then as soon as she's done working with Krista, she's like, well, now that Krista's gone, I can do whatever I want. It's like in those movies where the parents go out of town, the kids throw the rager at their house, right? So you have to be as a coach, you have to be the person to go, hey, listen, like you said, log it, see what happens. Let's say it puts you 200 calories over. If you truly think that that's going to make a huge difference in your results, then that's the issue. It's the thought behind it, not the actual ice cream. To give you an example from my personal life, like literally this week on Tuesday, my wife, you know, she knows me. So she's like, listen, I just want to prepare you. I got stuff to make lasagna for dinner. So do whatever you got to do, like emotionally or mentally, to prepare yourself that we're having lasagna for dinner tonight. And she said it jokingly, but again, because I'm not perfect. Like I still have those tendencies of like, oh my God, like, and those thoughts went through my head of like lasagna on a Tuesday. Like who does like all that stuff, right? But I ended up cooking it. I ended up eating two squares of it and it tasted fine. And again, nothing bad happened, but 6 years ago, I would have thought about that for multiple days. I would have changed my diet the days following. I would have restricted myself in ways, added extra workouts, whatever it was. And I didn't do that now because I'm just in a different space mentally. But again, it doesn't mean that that old part of you goes away completely. You're still going to have those thoughts. You just have to learn how to process them better and actually deal with it and not let it overtake your day. And that's the hard part for a lot of people.
It really is. I think back to periods of my life where on paper, I technically looked the most fit and was the most lean, right? But what I always tell people about it now in kind of walking through my own journey and my relationship with food, even my relationship to food tracking itself, I went through the periods of exactly what you said about the barriers and the thought process of like, okay, well, when I'm not working with a coach, then I'm just going to go ahead and eat whatever I want to eat. Mm-hmm. And that turned into this perpetual cycle of having relationships with a coach where I was basically chasing losing the same 15 to 20 pounds over and over again, mm-hmm. instead of figuring out what I wanted my relationship to food to look like, and then using macros as a tool to actually strengthen that. And mm-hmm. that's something that I'd love your take on. I haven't seen this as much on social media recently, but I'm going to say it's probably because I've changed who I follow. And there was a period of a lot of like bashing around macro tracking as being mm-hmm. obsessive, and that intuitive eating had to be the answer. Mm-hmm. And what I always found difficult about that was the people who typically bashed macro tracking were the ones who did let it go to the nth degree and mm-hmm. then immediately turned around and went to intuitive eating. And they're missing the part of the story to share with the follower that the reason why they now trust themselves with food was because the tracking actually allowed for education. Mm-hmm. That this person who now wants to lose some weight is like, well, should I eat intuitively? They're scared of the idea of tracking macros. And I think a lot of that comes down to how we frame it and the perspective of the coach, because I can now say that my relationship to food tracking is, it's so helpful because I see it as more of like the analogy I give clients a lot is like, these are like bumper plates in bowling and that's what they're there for. Right. Yeah. And it's okay to have some periods where we're a little bit more dialed in because you have specific goals you want to reach. And again, it's usually on a very specific, often shortened timeline. And that's what I'm asking somebody to dial it in, so to speak. But I really have a problem with like all these extremities of like, well, this is bad because it's going to cause this end result. No, not necessarily. It's a choice if it's going to cause that end result.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think that it's... Again, it's like, it's so nuanced, but I don't think that anyone needs to, from a mental perspective, meticulously track every single macro. But I think tracking your food with macro ranges or calorie ranges in mind, like I'm sure you do with your clients, is extremely educational, very helpful, and should probably be done by, I feel like if you did it, if macro tracking was not attached to body image or body composition results, I think it's something that you should teach in school. Like, I think like in 11th grade in health class, you should spend 3 weeks tracking your food to just learn how much protein is in things. What foods are fats? What, it's very educational. But again, because it was attached to body composition results, it became like this thing. And there is I actually just listened to a podcast, a psychology podcast, and it's about one of the things they talked about was this concept of personal responsibility. And one behavior pattern that people run into is they try to pursue a thing. It doesn't have to be weight loss, but a thing. The thing doesn't work out for some reason. And then the reaction is to run away from the thing and throw stones at the thing and then blame the thing and say that thing is evil. And then you join Facebook groups or other groups and you're just like, yeah, like macro tracking, it's evil, it's disorders. And it's not. It's just that was your experience with it. If you can then confront your relationship with food and go, well, why did I get that obsessive about it? Why did it scare me? Because that's what it is. It's fear. You're throwing stones at it and saying that it's evil because you're afraid of it, right? Yeah. You don't do
it's
that.
It's a lack of trust in yourself.
Yeah, but no one does that for you don't do that you don't run away from a bunny and go, oh my God, the bunny's scary, and start throwing stones at the bunny. But you might do that if it was like a grizzly bear, right? So it's a fear. I think that tracking your food can be very educational if you do it correctly. I think if you're coached through it, it could actually like in a positive way change your life. If you're obsessing about it, I think you need to be working with someone who gives you a safe space to talk about that obsession and help you get less obsessive about it. But do I think that the average person trying to lose 20 to 30 pounds needs to do it to a meticulous point where they're worried about going 7 grams over their carbs? Like probably not, right? To give you an example of this, from my personal life, like, again, I think that it's always a fear around your lack of control around a result, right? So, I'm trying to think of how to word this because I don't care how personal I get, but I see a therapist. I've done mindset work. I have my own all shit that I've continuously worked through in my adult life, trying to be a better dad, better husband. One of my big triggers in life, things that like take my anxiety or stress from like baseline level to like off the charts level, is things around finances, right? So I grew up low income. Money was always a stressor. I grew up around addiction, and there was a point where we lost our home, and there's like a lot of stuff in my childhood, and I'm the oldest of three boys, so I saw a lot of that. So what do I now? I'm the sole income provider. I own my own business, and I'm providing for a family, and I own a house. So what do I have to do? I have to pay attention to finances.
Sure.
And even when I was talking about this recently, is even when I can look at numbers and see that we have savings, there's money coming in, we have investments, and we have retirement plans set up. And I can see that on paper. If I have a month where, because I'm sure this happens to every coach, where you maybe get a new client, but you've lost four.
Mm-hmm.
The anxiety that causes physically, like the physical response I have to that is I can feel my body go into fight or flight. It causes me I've had times where my fucking limbs are weak and numb because I'm so anxiety ridden about that. And in that moment, logic doesn't help. It's all emotion. Now, a response to that could be, I say entrepreneurship and having responsibilities of kids and a wife and owning a home is evil. And if you do that, you're going to be obsessed with finances and obsessed with money, and it's going to be obsessive. And you have to think about money all the time. You have to think about finances. You have to think about your future. You shouldn't have to worry about that stuff. You should just intuitively live your life and not worry about stuff. And I could reject the entire system of family, home, job, entrepreneurship, and say that it's evil, or I can see a therapist once a month and do journaling and meditation and figure out why I respond that way to those numbers. Now, to some people might hear that and go, well, Adam, you sound like a fucking psycho. They're like, that's not a big deal. But that's it took me until the last couple of years to fully be able to connect with my clients about their food tracking, because mm-hmm. I didn't have that relationship with food tracking. So when people were freaking out about their carbs or freaking out about the scale, I was always like, no, like it's just data. It took me that internal work to realize this isn't about numbers. Like, it's not logic to them. When they see the scale spike up, they know they didn't gain 3 pounds of fat overnight. But it's that fight or flight response of I'm losing control. And then the instinct is to run away and throw stones. So that's when you see people go, I'm trying not to focus on the scale. I know the scale lies. The scale is evil. I don't want to track calories, all this stuff. And it's like, no, none of that stuff is evil. You have a relationship with it. You drew a picture on a piece of paper of a monster and put it on your hallway, on the wall in your hallway of your house. And every time you walk by it, you've convinced yourself it's a real monster and you run scared. But it's not. It's a made up relationship. Does that make sense?
100%. That was first. I appreciate you being open, and there's so much value in what you said, and equating it to other things in your life, I think is where people can really understand that in a way that's like, oh, wait a second. I can develop the tools, right? Like you said, meditation, journaling, seeing a therapist to be able to address some of these emotions. But what I think has happened for a lot of people with food, and this is just like my personal theory, is we forget to acknowledge the fact that food is necessary for life, right? Mm-hmm. But no one teaches you. You brought it up with the example of saying, hey, we should do this with like 11th graders. No one ever teaches you how to eat. And in your example, you didn't have an example of how to manage money. Like you had this story that it was scarce. It's not something that's taught in college or high school either. And like, we could do a whole podcast on why that's problematic too.
Yeah.
To this exact point. But you're then coming to coaches like us, and you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, even 60s. Like, I don't know the exact age range of people that you work with, but I find that a lot of people miss the fact that most of the work that we're doing in coaching is unlearning patterns mm-hmm. and behaviors and stories that you've told yourself for years. And because we've told them to ourselves for years, they're strong.
Yeah.
And it's okay that they're strong, but it's going to take the environment to feel like you have a safe space to land with your coach to start to have these conversations. And I've really realized in going through a lot of that myself with the exact examples you gave of like, especially when it comes to business and finance, and how I might equate that to the relationship that people have to numbers on the scale. For as often as you could say to a client, hey, it's just data, eventually they can get behind that idea. But what I've started to see even in the last few months is just asking them more questions about like, okay, like what's actually coming up for you right now? And mm-hmm. then let's talk through that, because ultimately the solution may be, and I do this with clients often, hey, can you track your food for the next week? And then don't pay a single thought or piece of attention to all this other biofeedback we typically look at, because I do have clients look at their digestion, their energy levels, their hunger cues. And for some people, that feels overwhelming sometimes. They can understand why I'm asking them to do it, because those are markers of their health. And they recognize that that's actually a way to appreciate more of this from a holistic perspective versus being so tied to the scale. But people are also busy, and they also have a lot of things on their mind. And I just said to my clients on a group call the other night, remember that this gets to be fun. And that we could even bring that back to the ice cream examples. Like, this doesn't have to be this like really intense process. Even if you do have specific goals, where I am going to ask you, like, I work with a lot of clients getting ready for their wedding. That is their big day. They want to look their absolute best. Are those people dialed in a little more than some of my other clients are? Hell yeah. But at the same time, I'm also reminding them throughout that you have your bachelorette party, you are going to your bridal shower. I don't want you to be the person who's sitting there in your head thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to have this like piece of cake that's in celebration of me, and you're going to think twice about it. Like, what's that going to do for you in the long run?
Oh, no, yeah.
Nothing good.
Nothing good. And I like what you said about, like, it gets to be fun. And I like to compare it, like, and learning any other skill. Like, let's say your goal is to be able to play a full song on guitar and you've never played a guitar before. It's not fun, like, fucking up the your fingers and, like, you know, like, learning it and you go to strum a note and it sounds awful. And you, none of that is fun. But it gets to be fun once you learn the skill of playing, and then you can just kind of play. And that's the fun part. And I think with a lot of things, people don't want to make it past the unfun part to get to the fun part. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. I think this might sound contradictory, but I think if you do it with the right mindset, it can be helpful. Is I think you just kind of have to put yourself in a mindset or a situation where you just don't have an option but to go through the unfun part. So, for example, I used to get super annoyed and frustrated when I would hear people talk about, like I want to hear other business owners or, you know, coaches, or not even coaches, just outside of that, talk about how, like, you know, running a business is fun and fulfilling, and like how, you know, and like how it can be fun and it's fun to do this stuff. And I would always be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, this is not fun. I don't like, I've gotten to the point at many times where, you know, I hated having my own business, but again, I was ignoring all the good stuff about it because I was so emotionally attached to this business is the vehicle by which I can provide for my family. It is, and it is a huge emotional trigger around finances, and I attach my self-worth to what I can provide and all that stuff. So again, it's a me. It's not the business's fault. It's just my own shit. So when people hear, like, this could be fun, they get annoyed because they're like, but it's not fun. Like, you don't understand. Like, I want to lose 50 pounds and I hate the way I look right now and all this stuff. And I get that. But I with business stuff, I just put myself in a situation where there's just no going back. Like, yeah, I have the option to quit my business and go get a job somewhere. But I just put myself in a position where it's like, I just don't have another option. I have to stick through the unfun mm-hmm. stuff. So when it comes to, like, your fitness, it's easy to not do that because you don't see the negative side effect for months and years, right? So, like, if you stop working out, you don't really deal with those consequences for, like, 2 years. So it's easy to put it off. So what I would do is, to your listeners, is if any of this resonates with you and you're not having fun with it yet, understand that just put yourself in a mental space of, there is no other option. I have to deal with the unfun part, and then just trust that it will get fun eventually. Right. And I know that's really hard to do, but if you come at it from that space, you will get there eventually. Like, this is fun for me. Like, I like having this conversation. I've been looking forward to this chat all day. And it's part of my work day, but I'm enjoying it and it's fun. And I've been having more fun with my business as of late, but again, it doesn't mean that those other stressors go away completely. It's just, I'm learning how to manage them better nowadays.
Yeah, it's that balance of, like, not taking this toxic positivity approach with it, because mm-hmm. I've realized with encouraging clients to look for the opportunities to have more fun, it's hard to do when you know that you want this other outcome. And it's the whole, like, I don't expect it to land for somebody immediately when I say, hey, let's really actually figure out how to enjoy the process, because there just are parts of this that when we are asking you to make changes and maybe confront some things you've been avoiding, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's where a lot of this does come from too, in the stories that we're telling ourselves, it's going to be uncomfortable. And that's not necessarily fun. But yeah. You really hit on a very good point that I'll just say in a slightly different way. It's also about looking for it. And something that I've realized is when we hold ourselves to these high standards, especially with a lot of the women I work with being really type A and just naturally being hard on themselves, we tend to look for the gap in what didn't go right mm-hmm. instead of looking for the things that did.
Yeah.
And you can change that mindset with this really small practice of waking up. This is at least how I do it, through the support of the coach that I work with. Look for the things that you're excited about in your day. When you get to the end of the day, intentionally write down 3 things that you are happy about that went great for you, because your whole to-do list for the next day is usually you being like, well, I didn't get this done. I have to do this. I have to do that. And I actually recently recorded a podcast episode that was a solo just on the power of the words that you're actually using and saying, I have to do something. I need to do something holds a very different tone and weight versus saying, I want to do this. And look, do I want to have to give a business example, go into my payment processing system and look at failed payments and then have a conversation with somebody of like, hey, this card didn't go through. No, I don't want to do that, but it comes with the territory of running a business. And then that same thing does apply to, hey, do you want to go to the grocery store and like make it this whole like romanticized experience when it's busy as hell at Trader Joe's and you're like, you know, pushing people to the side just to grab your chicken? No, it's really not that fun. But there are little things that you can take away in how you remember those experiences that you can look at it with just like more, eventually I'll say, more joy towards the process.
Yeah. And I like the concept of that, like, you know, two things can be truthful at the same time that are, that are opposite. So like something can be not fun, but you can enjoy it at the same time. So like, I can, like, I like to use the grocery shopping example because I hate grocery shopping. Like, I can't stand it. Like, it's annoying. It's the cart is always more full than I intend. There's so many bags. You got to put all of it away. You got to carry the groceries in. It's just, it's a whole thing. I don't enjoy doing it. But I noticed this happened during COVID, because during COVID, my wife was pregnant with our first son. And so, you know, we didn't know what was going on at the time.
Sure.
Like, this was before we understood like that it probably, you know, didn't need to be as big of a deal as it was, but like, whatever. We're like, okay, well, you can't grow grocery shopping. You're the pregnant one. So I have to, I was doing all the grocery shopping.
On you.
Yeah. So what I started doing was like, I started just like listening to a podcast while I grocery shopped. And that made me kind of look forward to it a little bit. It didn't change the fact that I still had to do all the things I didn't want to do.
Right.
But I gave me something, and literally that little thing of just like, oh, I get to listen to a podcast while I go to the grocery store today made me just that much more motivated to do it. Now, as a dad and as someone who, you know, grew up, you know, and saw hard financial times and knew what it was like to like not have food in the fridge and things like that, what one thing that helps me is when I'm doing grocery shopping and I am getting frustrated that like it's taking longer than I want, or they don't have something on the shelf or whatever it is, and then I'm paying for it, and like, you know, you're watching the total rack up and you're like, Jesus, groceries are so fucking expensive nowadays, like all this stuff kind of kicks in your head, and then all that stuff. I have to like kind of sometimes if I'm in the car by myself, I'll have to audibly say it. But like in time, I have to be like, I'm, you know, just grateful that I'm able to go to the store and fill my fridge for my family. And it gives me a sense of pride. Again, it doesn't change the fact that all the little tasks are annoying. But that emotional attachment to what I'm doing helps. So like, it's not going to change the fact that doing lunges or push-ups is going to burn or be hard. It's not going to change the fact that eating more protein when you don't want to or tracking your food, it doesn't, none of that stuff will ever be like necessarily enjoyable to you, but you can enjoy the emotional attachment to those things of what it's getting you. So if you go do a workout, you can acknowledge that the workout wasn't enjoyable, but you can get enjoyment from, I did a workout. I made a healthy and fit choice for myself. And again, that might just get you through to the next workout. And sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. The power of the reframe, the power of focusing on those details.
Yeah.
It's truly like, I'll say it again. I said the word power because those are really powerful things you can do for your mind. And just being able to appreciate the fact that like, we were laughing about it at the beginning in saying like, how funny is it that we will have more excitement for the 60-minute workout instead of the 20-minute?
Yeah.
That again also shows you from the opposite perspective, like just how powerful are the thoughts that we have and that we do have control over what they are too. So
yeah, it's really crazy. I just talked about that with a client today. I just like how your mind is scarily powerful, and it could really, really push you forward in life, or it can really, really hold you back. And there's a lot of areas of my life that I look back on where it held me back from a lot of things, but it was all mindset stuff, like just social things, career things, all that stuff. body image or body composition results. A lot of stuff, when I look back, I'm like, well, what was the actual hurdle? It's always just my mindset or my confidence or lack of confidence. And yeah, it can really, but then again, you can turn that around and have it propel you forward.
You totally can. So hopefully some of our thoughts inside of this podcast has that impact for somebody, because that's hopefully why I do this. And I know that's a big intention behind what you do too. And I want to be respectful of your time. So I'm going to bring it home for us with one final question, and then we'll have you plug your Instagram, your show, all the things, which I will put in the show notes too, so that we can make sure people can stay connected with you. And we've obviously talked about a lot. And as I said at the top of this recording, the reason why I don't preface the question of, you know, who are you to your core, is because there is some fun in not knowing where the person could take this, right? And it makes the conversation really interesting because there's just no expectation around it. So as you think about everything that we did touch on, if somebody's now made it to the point of the end of this episode, what would be the one takeaway, if you could just boil it down to maybe what you feel was the most important thing that you said, what would you want to leave them with?
Oh man, that's tough. That is tough. I don't know if I specifically said this, but I guess it was kind of implied.
Sure, go for it.
And it's hard to really wrap your head around this, but do most people listen to your show? Are they, like other coaches or potential clients? Like who's usually listening?
It's a mix. I tend to get a lot of feedback from other coaches of like, hey, I listened to this episode, but I do have a lot of clients who listen to it
too. Okay. So I think if you're someone who's a client, I really, really would want you to focus on doing some emotional work on yourself. Even if you feel like you're the most put together, type A, successful, happy person, you know, focus on one emotional thing that you can start working on for yourself. Cause I promise you, like, it'll trickle into every area of your life. And now this doesn't mean you stop working out or you stop tracking macros or anything like that, but like make the emotional pursuit part of your routine. And if that means 5 minutes of meditation or seeing a therapist or whatever it is, do some work on the emotional part. Don't get so attached to the sciencey, like, you know, results of it. If you're a coach listening to this, and maybe this is my own, you know, bias, but it's something that I wish more coaches talked about. And I wish, and this can go for honestly for anyone, it doesn't have to be coaches. If you're just someone who is a worker and is a hard worker or ambitious, stop. I don't know. It's like, it sounds stupid, but like question, like what your version of success is. And is it just something that like you've been convinced that is success? Cause I'm still working on that a lot. And like, it's like this morning, I was able to go to the coffee shop and get a bagel and coffee and have breakfast with my wife and son and have a 2 hour gap where I wasn't working and being with them. And every cell in my body was telling me that, like, you should be working, you should be doing something, this and that, like, you should be. And I just feel like if you're a coach, stop trying to be Instagram successful and focus on what you want your like actual day-to-day life to be like. If you're a client, stop focusing on what you want to achieve to be just scale or body composition successful, and focus on what you actually want your day-to-day life to be like. Because when you get to your goal or you get to be 80, none of the big, you know, things are going to matter. It's going to matter to like, you know, what you, like what your emotional state was for most of your life. If that's makes any sense.
It makes so much sense. I had said this to you on your show and I kind of alluded to it in other conversations we had. I had this conversation with somebody literally last week. So I'm sitting here smiling, being like, this is the universe's sign of reinforcing this to me by you also sharing it. But the emotional work for me personally has been like the domino effect to then help me in continuing to prioritize myself and stay committed to the routines that I know are actually serving me and showing up and being the person that I want to be. So I couldn't, you know, I can't emphasize that enough either. And it's something I've made more of an effort to start talking to clients about more. I've spent more time doing episodes on this podcast that are focused on that. Like the last three episodes that I have done have all been about like healing from really different angles. And this kind of speaks to that too, because it's just, it's another piece of it. And I'd actually even argue that I've really learned since the beginning of this year in particular, it's the most important piece in the fact that it has the domino effect the way that I'm saying. Like, it's gotten me to be able to be more comfortable with just being still and like sitting with what's ever coming up for me. I've actually realized that I can be more clear on what it is that I want. Like exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. And I know that sometimes when you're going through it, there's times where I've been just, you know, in quotes, going through it, like going through something, and I would have heard something like this and it maybe wouldn't have resonated, but it, and it takes time for you to really accept and receive it. But like, you know, 2023 was a really rough year for me and for my wife and us as a family. And there was a many points where I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I can't seem to like, I don't know what's going on. And we don't have to get onto the whole thing, but basically like within 2023, you know, we had two miscarriages. My wife was just emotionally, physically, like in a bad spot. My business was down like, you know, $50,000-$60,000 from the year prior, like all that shit, like just the combination of everything. And I think that one quote that I've kind of hung on to and I've kind of preached this to my clients is basically like, people want to be tough and resilient, but they don't want to go through tough times and have to be resilient, right? You want to identify as that. And it took me a long time to get to this place, but I'm not saying that this is like, you know, how it works. But for example, like my wife had, you know, like I said, two back-to-back miscarriages and very bad spot. She's trying to do all the physical stuff. Supplements, nutrition changes, everything. And it wasn't until, and I'm not making any claims here, I'm saying it wasn't until she did some really deep mindset shit in June. We had our second miscarriage in June of 2023. And in July, she finally was just like, I don't know what to do. I've tried all the physical stuff. And she did some really deep, deep mindset work. And then in August, we were pregnant, and now we're 7 weeks away from having a baby. And I'm not saying that like I'm not claiming any claims there, but that was literally the only change she made.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying that like that's the key to everything, but like it just shows how powerful it is when you can really identify. She identified basically like what her deep rooted subconscious beliefs were. And it, I don't know, like she's been a different person ever since. And like, I feel like I'm doing that work on myself. So anyway, I know that we said we were going to end it like 10 minutes ago, but like
the emotional piece is like so crazy.
Yeah. It's so crazy how much it works. And I've honestly remodeled my entire approach to my business around it. And my self-limiting belief was, why am I qualified to do this? I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychiatrist. Like, are people going to be turned off by this? But once I started talking to my clients about this stuff, I mean, people I had been working with for months or years were just like, oh my God, I this is amazing stuff. So really focus on it, guys. It's really important.
I've been going through that exact shift and incorporating more of this into my coaching just by going through it myself.
Yeah.
And it's trickled into every area of my life, my friendships, pursuing other relationships, thinking about the type of client that I'm attracting as a result of that. So I'm with you. I believe in all of it, like to my core. And I'm really glad that we touched on this. And again, I know I've said it a couple times, but I really appreciate you being so open about this, because it's conversations like this and continuing to have them and normalizing them are what's actually going to be powerful enough to cause that shift for people. I had a former client message me today on Instagram, and she saw a post that I did like 2 months ago at this point, just drawing the parallel to the fact that one change I made in January was spending more time with my phone and do not disturb. And I made it a little Instagram clickbaity in that I said that was my reason for losing 5 pounds. Yeah. And it is more nuanced than that. Yeah, but at the same time, it's not, because I limited the distraction so that I could focus more on me. And the fact that she reached out to me now 2 months later and was like, I did what you said, And she was like, I feel, we didn't talk about the scale. We didn't talk about anything like that. She just said, I feel 100 times better because I realized that there's so many things that can just wait. And I was making myself feel like, oh my God, I'm on the go all the time when that didn't have to be my reality. And like, I love getting messages like that. Like, that is why I do the things that I do. That is why I have this podcast. That is why I feel honored to be able to facilitate conversations like this. So I really just want to acknowledge you for that. And I appreciate you because I know that's going to make a difference for at least one person, if not a hell of a lot of people who listen to this.
No, and I appreciate you having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to have you back because there are like probably 15 other topics. So
please do. I would love to, I would love to come back anytime. I enjoy doing these things. And I would love to.
Thank you. Tell everybody where they can stay connected with you. Drop your Instagram, your podcast, all that good stuff.
My Instagram is Badger Strength, spelled exactly like it sounds. It's just my last name and strength. My website is badgerstrength.com. And on both of those places, you can also find my podcast, which is called Talkin' Fit, which I thought was a funny name because it's like talking
like
shit,
it.
But Talkin' Fit.
I love it.
Yeah, that's pretty much all my stuff. I also have, again, on all of those places, you can find access to free resources that I put out. I have an email list if you want to join that. I send out about 5 emails a week with that are not spammy. They're just like, you know, mindset tips, nutrition tips, things like that. And then I also have a Facebook group called Realistic Weight Loss for Busy Adults. So it's pretty straightforward. And I'm pretty engaged in there as well. So any one of those places. But if you go to Badger Strength on Instagram, you can find links to all that stuff.
Amazing. Well, thank you again. And to everybody who tuned in today, you guys know the deal. Share this episode if there was even a piece of it, which I'd be shocked if there's not, that impacted you in some way. Or maybe there's some things that came up and you're thinking about another person that it might be helpful for you to have this conversation with, but you don't know how to approach it. Podcasts are a really good way to break the ice in that regard and start a good conversation. So from wherever you're listening from, I appreciate you guys. Adam, thank you again for being here with me, and we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.